the who's who of ufology definitely was visited by ABC television for this forthcoming documentary. And certainly the name Timothy Good is smack dab in the middle of all of that. So I suspect they probably reached out to you, Timothy, one way or the other. Did you speak to ABC?
Yes, I spoke to one of the researchers who just asked my opinion and if I could put them in touch with certain key witnesses and things like that.
Yes.
And I think I just helped them with one case, actually, so that was the extent of my involvement.
Well, they spent 2 days with me, Timothy, 2 days here at my home.
It was
pretty incredible. Be about 30 seconds probably on TV. Anyway, the really important thing here is that it is going to be a two-hour big network ABC primetime documentary on UFOs. And the big question on everybody's mind, Timothy, even my mind, you never know what television is going to do. It's being billed, you heard the ad for it run a minute ago, it's being billed as a serious investigative piece on ufology.
Right.
Any idea, do you know how it's going to come out, how they're going to treat it? Do you have any sense?
I know nothing other than their press release art, I'm afraid, but who knows? If you recall, way back in the late 1980s, do you remember UFO Cover-Up Live, which was, I think, a two-hour production airing in Moscow and Washington simultaneously, and there was quite a bit of material forthcoming from some retired military guys, if you recall.
Yes.
And we had the Condor and Falcon episode.
Oh, yes.
And everything. So who knows? I suspect, however, it'll be far more conventional than that, and a serious, for once, journalistic attempt to get at the facts.
I hope you're correct. How in the world did you first become interested in the world of ufology? It doesn't seem from, you know, the background of being a violinist, and it just doesn't mix somehow, yet it did.
Right. Well, I've always been passionate about aircraft and space travel art, so it was a natural progression, particularly when, in 1955, that's 50 years ago, I was given the book, The Flying Saucers Are Real, written by Major Donald Kehoe, of course, and this was given to me by an American cousin who said, Timothy, you know, you like airplanes and stuff, it's time you learnt about flying saucers. So that is really where the interest was stimulated, and I haven't looked back since.
All right. In America, around the world, we have had many very, very credible sightings by pilots.
Exactly.
How many, roughly?
Well, according to Dr. Dick Haynes, Richard Haynes, who runs the national, you know, the reporting center for anomalous phenomena, NARCAP, he thinks there's been about 3,400. And that might have increased by now, since 1920.
That's a lot.
It's a great deal, and I think there have probably been a great deal more because many pilots do not report their sightings. Civilian pilots don't report them for fear. It's a bad career move, particularly if they're in a major airline. We found that out, and there are, in fact, regulation orders, procedure orders that were published in America way back in the 1950s for the reporting of these things, and the press was to be avoided. But as far as the military is concerned, of course, there are strict regulations, and many, many encounters remain classified at an above top-secret level in the interest of national security. And I can understand that because, as General Chidlaw said many years ago, and he was head of Air Defense Command at one time, we've lost many men and planes trying to intercept these objects. And that is a fact. And I think that's quite disturbing. There have also been disturbing near collisions with airliners as well as military aircraft. And this would be disturbing if all the facts were known. But
well,
I think we
Timothy,
have to...
it's particularly disturbing in view of the fact that the United States government just simply dismisses UFOs. And I think they've said they're not a threat to national security. And so they don't chase them.
Well, they do. And people say to me, you know, Tim, why, if these things are so super technologically advanced and they've got presumably very adequate means of protecting themselves. Why do we continue to send jets up chasing them? My answer to that is that we require as much data from these craft as possible. We need gun camera film. We need radar signatures. We need communication signatures. We need all sorts of infrared, all sorts of things across the spectrum to check and double check against previous experiences just how near we can get to these things, what the effects are, and we can learn a great deal more about their technology.
Well, Timothy, you mentioned gun cameras. It seems to me that through all the years, we should have gun camera footage.
We do.
And we do have.
Yeah.
How much of...
We have a lot of it. Most of it's being withheld. I spoke to a senior official in the Ministry of Defense. This is before Nick Pope, by the way, one of Nick Pope's predecessors. Nick headed the UFO desk at the Ministry of Defense from 1991 to 1994. But back, 20 years prior to that, Ralph Noyes headed the same department, and he told me that part of his briefing was to be shown military gun camera clips of UFOs, and he saw them. He said they weren't absolutely sensational by any means, but these are things that, you know, have either been lost conveniently or destroyed or just completely withheld in the interests of security.
Well, Timothy, speaking of security, I'm in America where we still have the First Amendment. You're in Britain, though, where there's different kinds of laws with regard to disclosure of secret things. Isn't that right?
Yes. Generally speaking, records are withheld. Certain military records and others are withheld typically for 30 years, but often to 50 years, sometimes 100 years, and sometimes some things never get released at all.
Mm-hmm.
A classic example is that in the last few years, we've had some top secret documents relating to the British government's Flying Saucer Working Party, as it was called, which was established in 1950 under Prime Minister Clement Attlee. And those were only released in 2002 because they date back to the early 1950s. In fact, they were released, I think, 2001. And there's still things being withheld. And we do now have a Freedom of Information Act. Now, you've had one for 35 years?
Long time, yes.
I guess. Well, this was passed by Act of Parliament, and it's now in place as of January the 1st, 2005. And the Ministry of Defense, anticipating that the cranky ufologists would be bombarding them with requests for all the UFO data.
They have big bonfire or what?
Spent months, if not years, actually weeding out tons of stuff and dishing it out so that this would sort of preempt all the inquiries from us guys.
Did it?
And a lot of stuff has been released. Nick Pope tells me that most of it's innocuous, but it has actually generated a tremendous amount of interest in the press, more than any other aspect of the Freedom of Information Act. And in last month, there were huge articles, you know, in the Times, the Telegraph, the Financial Times, the Independent. Those are our, you know, main newspapers, and some of the smaller papers, local papers, but tremendous interest. And there was a huge article by Nick on the release of these things. And interestingly, those who are determined still to debunk everything, such as the Times, they had an editorial. First of all, there was an article in the Times which ignored all the really good reports by, you know, RAF people. The good reports, impressive reports by pilots and other military officers, which really quite startling cases. It ignored those and concentrated on the lights in the sky and the balloons and the kites, and said how Britain's X-Files said that UFOs were just a waste of time. That was the headline. And the editorial actually said, pie in the sky, flying saucers are close encounters with the human imagination. Well, I really, you know, that really got me going, and I fired off an email to the Times editorial, but it was never published, of course.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of interest, and in, as I say, in the UFO aspect of the Freedom of Information Act more than anything else.
Do you think that the United States government and your government are hand in hand on the whole UFO thing?
Up to a point, Art. What I think happened is that since the late 1940s, the CIA came across to Britain and chatted with their intelligence counterparts over here, Air Force people as well, and they, I think, suggested that we play down the really good sightings. I'm sure of this because the Flying Saucer Working Party seems to have had a remit to debunk especially the best sightings, like in 1950. In August 1950, there was a sighting, a low-level sighting at the Farnborough Air Base, where a lot of test pilots were based. And this thing came over at low level, an actual craft accompanied by hissing and crackling sounds. It was seen by one of their top pilots.
Really?
And other personnel, and the thing was repeated at a further distance in the following, about 3 weeks later, seen by many test pilots. And those that were interviewed were told not to discuss it with anyone, not even among themselves. And the whole thing was debunked, and you can see that in the reports where they say, you know, the poor chap, obviously, they were just seeing conventional aircraft. I mean, you know, and they were absolutely outraged when these reports came out a few years ago.
Well, that certainly sounds like the good old USA to me.
Definitely, in my opinion.
Why do you think, Timothy, that our mutual good friends, the French, appear to be so much more open, and they really do, about ufology? Why?
Well, it's not that they don't have difficulties there. Believe me, I've spoken to officials, military and otherwise, there, and they are very concerned about ridicule, because, you know, even in the French Ministry of Defense, there's the sort of mixed views about the subject, and there's a need to know and all that sort of thing. So most people don't actually know what's going on, and they tend to ridicule those who take a serious interest in it. But they are more open. It's true. I mean, they have this group, SEPRA, is the acronym, and they still investigate cases. But the real work is still done behind the scenes, as in other countries. So it's not as if it's a sort of total disclosure in France.
If you were to look around at the various countries of the world, including Brazil, Japan, I mean, just all around the world, South Africa, what country do you think is the most open about UFO incidents?
Well, in recent years, I would say Russia.
Russia?
Yeah, there's a great deal of stuff has come out there from, you know, high-ranking generals have come forward. They've appeared in several documentaries, including in the excellent Out of the Blue, and other documentaries that I've been involved with. And it's quite amazing some of these people have come forward. And Gorbachev, as you know, has come out with several statements acknowledging that he discussed the extraterrestrial threat with President Reagan at the Geneva summit in 1985.
As a theoretical question or something beyond theoretical?
I wish I knew. Because, you know, he didn't exactly pass it off. He said, you know, the United States president and I discussed the question of an extraterrestrial threat and agreed that in the event of an invasion, the Soviet Union and the United States would join forces to repel such an invasion. And he went on to add, you know, I don't dispute the hypothesis, but I think it's too early yet to worry about such a possibility.
But you believe we had an agreement with the then Soviets to join forces in the case of an invasion?
I think it's likely.
Wow. That's pretty interesting. I know that President Reagan, of course, made several statements alluding to the possibility that there could be others. There could even be a mutual threat. I recall his saying that and the shock it brought on when he did.
Yes. Well, of course, his interest goes back to 1974, if not earlier, when he was governor of California, because there was a UFO sighting while he was flying in the governor's plane, and he ordered the pilot to chase it. Of course, they couldn't get anywhere near it, but it created a lot of excitement. And there was actually a Wall Street journalist on board the plane, and Reagan was all excited because I think he'd had a previous sighting, and he talked about his great interest in the subject and so forth. And I think in that very important speech before the United Nations General Assembly in 1987, I think it was September 1987, he says, I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat, and yet I ask, is not an alien force among us? And then he went on quickly to add, what could be more alien, than war and the threat of nuclear war and so on. But I think he was trying to tell us something. I'm absolutely convinced of it.
Do you believe that a U.S. president or even a British prime minister can take office and on their first day tell their aide, look, here I am. I want everything on my desk that we know about UFOs, and I want it there in the morning.
They can try. President Clinton tried. He didn't get anywhere fast, that's for sure. So
Do you really know that? I mean, maybe he did find out everything, and maybe that everything included, not informing the American people for the following reasons.
That may be the case, Art. I honestly don't know. I suspect he was not told everything.
Well, last Sunday we repeated a program I did with John Lear, who took me through what's called Lear Test. And he went through this long litany of, listen here, Art, here are the things. Could you tell the public the following? And he named off about 25 things that obviously you could never, ever tell the American public
right.
And have a shred of credibility left.
That's absolutely true. I wholeheartedly agree. I don't know all the reasons for the cover-up, Art, but I suspect that some of the reasons would be disturbing to the body politic, as it's often been said, and to society in general. It's much better just to let the facts leak out gradually.
All right, Timothy, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. My guest from London, England, is Timothy Good. Here is interesting. Timothy Good just suggested that it's a trickle-down sort of slow release policy regarding this information that absolutely couldn't be released en masse. It just couldn't. It would upset the whole world would go on tilt. And so I've wondered a little bit over the years, and I've been doing this for a lot of years now, folks, whether I could actually be part of that process, an unwitting dupe, as it were, trickling out information that the government wants trickled out. Of course, that would make many other people, including the ABC television network, part of that process. Timothy, have you ever wondered if you were part of that process?
Indeed.
Being used, yeah.
In fact, I have the last chapter of my last book, and I'm going to send you my last book, Unearthly Disclosure, Art. I don't know if you have it, but
I do not, and I would love it. And moreover, if you could sign it, I would.
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
In the last chapter, which is entitled Resident Aliens, I disclose information which has come to me via a high-ranking source who worked at the Pentagon in the U.S. Air Force Air Staff and Joint Staff. And this information was given to a friend of mine, an ex-Army intelligence guy who's a journalist in the aerospace world. Between 1986 and 1989, he was given a great deal of information about what was actually going on, and I'm quite sure this was part of an official leak.
How much of that? How much of that can you relate here?
Oh, there's tons of it. I mean, what do you want to know about bases? I mean, I've been told, for example, aliens have been coming to Earth for a very long time. They've established permanent bases here in Australia, the Caribbean, Pacific Ocean, Soviet Union, and in the United States, and specific locations are given in some cases. Now, that's just for starters, but obviously there is an amount of disinformation, and the question is, how does one sort the wheat from the chaff?
But, how do you?
There's a great deal of information. We've apparently, some military and scientific elements in the intelligence community have established communication with ETs. There has been a transfer of their technology. We are working on it.
Well, let's be clear on this, Timothy. I asked you the question about the president for a reason. You know, whether he could demand everything that we know about UFOs and get it. Of course, we can't know the answer to that, but I guess the bigger question is, Timothy, is it your opinion that there's a group outside of elected government's knowledge that...
Absolutely.
Sort of a majestic 12 or its equivalent.
Or its equivalent. But, of course, what I was told that, for example, at least 100 people in OSI, which is the Air Force Intelligence Office of Special Investigations, there are at least 100 people. I'm going back to 1986, 1989, because that's when this information was given. There were at least 100 people in OSI who had knowledge in varying degrees about the extraterrestrial presence and were actually dealing with it. When I was in the Pentagon in 1998, at the invitation of General Kenneth Israel, who was then director of the Defense Airborne Reconnaissance Office, as it was then called, they at that time handled the unmanned spy planes, the UAVs, unmanned aerial vehicles.
Right.
He indicated to me that, in his opinion, this was more a policing task as opposed to national security, and he therefore suggested to me or hinted that OSI was much more likely to be in charge of the investigations.
Oh, a policing task.
That was his opinion.
As in?
Make of that what you will.
As in cleaning up? As in, you know, sanitizing some incident?
Well, OSI has all sorts of tasks, you know, other than some of the more obvious ones. I
yes.
mean, they're into counterintelligence, they're into investigations, they're into problems with people violating their national security oaths and things like that. So... I think it's interesting from that point of view, but I was given a great deal of information, really, and you'll learn that in that last chapter. And there are concerns about what the aliens are doing. It's not a question, I'm told, of one species coming here. There are several. And more important, there appears to be a conflict of interests between some of these beings.
Regarding
our planet.
All right. Can you describe the various motivations of these groups? If you understand there are conflicts, then
yeah.
that would imply we understand something of the motivations.
Well, I can only speak very broadly here, Art. There's definitely several races. I mean, goodness knows, I wouldn't put a number on it. You know, as to who's been coming here and for what purpose over the years, because it's been going on for thousands of years. But from what I gather, some of them definitely have a vested interest in this planet and its resources. And there is concern about the abduction process, which it is believed by them that it is definitely related to some sort of hybridization program.
Are the resources of this planet, oil and metals and that sort of thing, or are they more likely the human occupants of Earth?
I think more likely the human occupants. So they appear to need animal materials as well, some of them. I do think there could be an interest in some of our materials and minerals here. Some of them have suggested that. Some people who've established communication with humans have established that they need stuff here.
Mm.
And there appear to be a number of very large undersea bases which are causing disturbances. Now, as it was put to me, you know, they're concerned that the fact that some of the aliens are, quote, messing around with tectonic plates in the Pacific Ocean. Now, that opens all sorts of cans of worms, as I think recent events
yes.
Might suggest. I'm not suggesting for one moment that the tsunami had anything to do with aliens, but I'm just saying that apparently, according to this source, some aliens are messing around with tectonic plates, and they have some large undersea bases. Now, why are they doing that? I don't know.
Yes, Timothy, but a natural inference from that statement would be that there could be a connection between the tsunami and messing around with the Pacific's tectonic plates.
There could be. There could be. Or they might even be messing around with the tectonic plates for their own purposes, to protect their bases or to protect the Earth. You know, that's the good news. I mean, there's always good news and bad news. It's like, you know, whatever threat is posed by aliens, we have to look at the positive side of things. The fact that they've shown their ability to paralyze our nuclear missile bases at the drop of a hat.
They have shown that too, haven't they?
Yes.
Would you please explain to the audience a couple of incidences where that occurred? This is pretty heavy stuff, folks. It's undeniable. I've seen specials on television about what you're about to hear about, and it seems undeniable. Timothy, how good is the evidence that this really happened, and what happened and when?
Well, there have been numerous witnesses who've come forward, Robert Salas for one. I haven't got the book to hand. I've just received a new book by Robert Salas and another author about those extraordinary events, which is very impressive. And during the next break, I'll go and get it, because I would, I really want to plug that book, because I'm most impressed by what I've read about it.
All right,
so
but the bottom line is, if I recall correctly, the U.S. Had a couple of missile launch.
They had intrusions. There have been numerous intrusions at nuclear missile sites in North Dakota, all over.
They were disabled, I believe.
They were disabled, yes, and it's happened in the Soviet Union, too, in the former Soviet Union.
And I'm recalling this TV special in which some ICBMs in Russia actually went into a launch sequence. Is that true?
I vaguely recall that, Art, but I can't confirm that.
Okay. Did the U.S. military capture an alien spacecraft before Roswell?
Well, you know, last year and continuing now, I've been investigating an extraordinary case reported. It goes back to August of 1945, when in San Antonio, not Texas, San Antonio, New Mexico, which is not that far from the White Sands missile range.
Right.
Two boys encountered an apparent crashed craft, and on one of the boys' father's ranches. Jose Padilla was one of the boys, and it was his father's ranch. And the other witness was Remy Baca. And I went out to meet them in June. At least I met Remy. I have not met Jose yet, but we've been in communication. It's an extraordinary story. They were quite alarmed by the incident. They claimed to have seen a large area where in this canyon where this craft had come down, and a gouge in the earth the size as long as a football field. It was vaguely circular, with a sort of type of fin on top, but nothing like an aircraft fin. They've made a model of it. I've seen it. And they headed back, worried about casualties and so forth, because they'd seen, when they got as close as they dared, some sort of strange-looking creatures moving around inside it, like children.
Huh.
And they had no hair on. They couldn't see much more detail than that. And they went back and told Padilla Sr., who told the police, and they all drove toward the crash site 2 days later, but the wreckage was nowhere to be seen. But suddenly it reappeared. It had been, apparently someone had made an attempt to cover it up with dirt and debris. And then later on, the craft, I'm cutting a long story short here, the craft was apparently recovered, and the boys at several stages got a chance to witness these things from a hidden area, and this thing was loaded onto a tall boy. And as I say, they were watching from this secluded position, and soldiers were throwing bits down a crevice so they wouldn't have to carry them all the way down.
Huh.
It rings true in a way. A lot of information forthcoming. One of the elder boy, Jose Padilla, at one stage, when the craft was unguarded, clambered inside a gouge in the opening, and on a sort of area there, he managed to extract a device. Now, I have seen that device and handled it and photographed it.
Really?
The The unfortunate thing is, and it's, as I refer to as the fly in the ointment, is that it does look very, very conventional. It looks like some kind of bracket with space provisions for fasteners or screws or whatever. It's about 11 inches long. It has been analyzed, and it does appear to be conventional aluminum. So that's a problem. But on the other hand, we have the testimony of these two witnesses, and they're absolutely adamant that this thing did event. So there is this contradiction which I'm left with, and it is a stumbling block for me, I have to say.
What about Roswell itself, Timothy?
Roswell happened.
It happened. I mean,
Roswell happened.
Straight out, it really.
I mean, all the testimony, sworn affidavits from all those high-ranking people. You know, we have Dubose, who's often overlooked, General Dubose, who said that the cover-up was ordered by General Clements McMullen at the time, and there were very, very good reasons. They said, look, you know, we'd just been through a world war with atomic bombs on Japan, firebombing of great cities, destruction on an unprecedented worldwide scale. Then came this flying saucer business, and it was simply too much for the public to have to deal with. And,
was Roswell the beginning? Sometime between Roswell and now, when did our governments, respectively, recognize, meet, even make deals with some of these creatures? And did that in fact happen? I'm sure you believe
it. I think it did happen. Yeah, I don't know about a deal, but I think we certainly, there was an exchange of information. There was a survivor, by all accounts. I'm not the only person to. Dr. Edgar Mitchell, sixth man to walk on the moon, has also established very good contacts in the military and intelligence communities, and he's also been told that there was a survivor who lasted a certain number of years, and I believe that. I think official interest began well before Roswell, certainly during World War II, because all these pilots were reporting these things, not just Foo Fighters.
So do you think there's been official contact? When I say that, I mean, I guess more than just with a crash victim, for example, has there been some sort of communication between species?
I think so. I'm bearing in mind the story about President Eisenhower in 1954, at what was then Muroc, later Edwards Air Force Base. I think there could be some truth to that story. And I know from people I've talked to, people say, you know, why don't they contact our government leaders, our military leaders? Well, I think they have done. But those are the people that least likely to come out with the truth.
Well, when you look at...
excuse me.
That's quite all right. When you look at the Earth, and you talk about minerals, or you talk about, what's here that's not on Mars and Venus and all the other planets that we're now discovering with Hubble and other telescopes, all these planets around, all these suns, but the unusual thing about Earth that really stands out would be us.
Sure. I mean, I think Earth is unique, not just in our solar system, but maybe for light years around.
More than the iron, more than the uranium, it would be the intelligent life on Earth. It seems to me that would stand out like a beacon.
Mm-hmm.
And sure. That would account for their interest. That would be my guess anyway.
And the interest was definitely accelerated in World War II because of our nuclear developments, that's for sure.
Well, I wonder what the current state of understanding between ourselves and whoever else it might be is. Do you have clues about that?
No, I wish I did. I'm trying.
Do you have guesses about it?
It would just be pure speculation, Art. I prefer to deal with what few facts we can be sure of.
Okay. Well, I know that there is a lot of conversations you have with people that probably information comes to you that you wouldn't put on the air.
Yes.
And from that, I thought you might have some educated guesses.
Yes, but before I exploded with my coughing fit, I was about to tell you of Air Marshal Sir Peter Horsley, who was an equerry, that's like a kind of military attaché to the Queen and Prince Philip for 7 years. back in 1954, and he was also deputy chief of strike command on a decorated war hero, flown 90 different types of aircraft, and he claims that in 1954 he had a two-hour meeting with an extraterrestrial being arranged via a British Army general. And this took place in the middle of London in the presence of a witness. And he wrote up that story in his autobiography, Sounds from Another Room, and he gave me some additional information, which I published in my book, Alien Base. And it's absolutely extraordinary. And
can you tell us about...
Well, there's so much information attached to that story. I mean, this being appeared human-like. He didn't say, I'm an alien. He could... The first disturbing thing that...
All right, tell you what, Timothy. It's top of the hour. Hold it, Timothy. Welcome back. A two-hour meeting. If there was a two-hour meeting, I would like to know the details of that meeting. I would like to know as much as I could what was said and what was answered and whatever you can tell me.
Well, the first thing that Sir Peter noticed during this meeting was that this guy, whoever he was able to read his mind. And later on, Sir Peter told me, he didn't write about this in his book, but he told me that what disturbed him more than anything else was the fact that this guy knew all Britain's top secret nuclear secrets.
Huh.
And, well, he began by explaining that man was now striving to sort of break his earthly bonds and travel to the moon and planets beyond. We were developing, but there was a dark age on Earth. we were prepared to sacrifice almost anything, the natural environment, animals and humans. And there was a dreadful specter of blowing up our world. So they were concerned, it seems, about that. He went on to the origins of life in the universe, stated that most of the UFOs we see are robot-controlled.
Mm-hmm.
Some are manned in order to oversee the whole program and to ensure that the probes do not land or crash by accident. And they spoke that there have been, since time immemorial, observers of our planet, vessels out of the sky bringing strange visitors, and that contact has been established on a very selective basis, where they judge that such contact could not harm either party.
Hmm.
And apparently they say they've studied Earth for a very long time. They have extraordinary technological abilities, very highly developed mental powers, including extrasensory, thought reading, hypnosis, and this I find particularly interesting, the ability to use different dimensions.
Hmm. As a matter of fact, I was going to ask you somewhere down the line that, you know, beings coming from light years and light years away seems incredible. Maybe it can be done, but it seems incredible. But if we just, you know, if we had someone come from another dimension, they would appear to us to be as alien as if they had come from another planet. And, of course, you know, you just hop, skip, and a jump from another dimension if you know how to do it. So,
well, the implication in this case is that these beings are related, some of them at any rate, are related to us genetically.
Huh.
What I've heard from other sources is that some of these highly advanced beings are indeed responsible for upgrading humanity, upgrading the development of human beings going way back tens of thousands of years. As to the dimensional aspect, I don't doubt that there are beings who exist solely in other dimensions, but the implication here is that this guy was quite physical, quite solid, but that their races are so advanced that they can manipulate dimensions. And I think this happens with their spacecraft. There's a number of intriguing accounts by people claiming contact to say that it is a question not just of linear travel. I'm sure you've heard all this before, all you listeners, and you, of course, Art, that they manipulate space-time, as Einstein called it,
mm-hmm.
by folding it rather than traveling in a linear mode.
Mm-hmm.
So that to manipulate space-time is to manipulate a dimension. And I think this would account for their extraordinarily rapid disappearances sometime. Sometimes maybe they're just going so fast in the blink of an eye, but I think at other times they're just translating into another dimension to get where they want to in a, you know, in maybe split second.
Let's jump back to something you said. You said that we have some relationship to them genetically. Boy, that sure is one sentence that covers a lot of territory, Timothy.
Yes, well, of course, this has been mentioned by a number of researchers going way back. And
yes, well, are they our creators?
Well, what I understand is that they genetically upgraded the existing beings on this planet, the basic humans that when they first appeared, the basic creatures.
So there was already life existent on Earth when they arrived, and they did the upgrade.
Yes. Yes, I mean we were you know just vaguely out of the ape stage, and so it is said. So it is said by a lot of contactees. I have a lot of reports of this in Alien Base, my book, which specializes in contact stories. And there's a marvelous story by Albert Coe, who encountered an alien being and his spacecraft in Canada in 1920, and he had meetings throughout his life with this person and with one or more of these people, and I find that story very compelling.
But that does make them our creators, though. If they upgraded us, then they took us from what was not intelligent life and did the upgrade that made us who we are, making them our creators.
I think to that extent you're right, yes. And I think that this is part of a sort of colonization process, if you like. I think we were colonized.
Huh. And these kinds of stories, this two-hour conversation and others, have led you to this position?
Yes, absolutely. One of the most compelling contacts for me was a lady I knew for several decades, in fact. She's passed on now, unfortunately, but she had contact back in 1963 with several human-type extraterrestrials who were engaged in a very delicate operation which involved the use of some of our top scientists, some of whom actually traveled to their bases. And they had bases, some of these people, for example, in South America.
We've heard of a lot of recent incidents in South America, of course.
Yep.
You've looked into those?
Yes, I have. I think there are probably a number of alien bases in South America and offshore. It was the extraordinary case of the guy, Ludwig Palmen, a German businessman who in the late 60s encountered a group of these beings and actually visited their base, which was in the jungle in the Amazon area. Extraordinary story.
Well, you would think that the United States and Russia, with all these spy satellites, would be clearly on to an alien base.
Yes, it depends what the counterintelligence is of the aliens in terms of disguising their technologies and their bases. So I'm quite sure they're capable of dealing with that. But yes, I'm quite sure. I'm 100% sure that some governments do actually actively use their spy satellites for trying to detect undersea and other activities on this planet.
Yes, interestingly, the big project called HARP, the HARP project in Alaska, one of the stated goals of HARP is underground tunnels and bunkers. They're looking for them with this wild project up in Alaska. Heard about that?
I've heard about it, but I haven't gone into that in sufficient degree to be able to comment.
Might be worth looking into on your part, because underground tunnels and bunkers, that's very much part of what their original charge is.
Yes, Richard Sorder, I believe, has done a great deal of work on that, if I'm correct.
So if we have a relation, a genetic relationship to them.
To some of them.
this does beg questions about all these religions that man has on Earth, and these concepts of a creator leading you down that path.
Well, I think it's undeniable. I mean, you've only got to look at the Bible. I mean, there are reports apparently in the Hindu Vedas and the Brahmin records. But the Bible is absolutely chock full of extraordinary incidences of strange beings who mated with people.
Yes.
Who produced people who lived for many hundreds of years, apparently, if you believe it. I wasn't there. I don't know.
That's all true.
And then, you know, the Ezekiel, Elijah and the flying chariot, all these things, descriptions of strange beings. And then the New Testament, I mean, Jesus, the Star of Bethlehem, whatever that was, it wasn't a star. It was very specific. It pointed out a particular building. You have Jesus' phenomenal abilities, telepathy, levitation, healing, and the resurrection, which even the Catholic Church, I believe, acknowledges to be a bodily, a physical resurrection, accompanied by shining beings, and then the reappearance to Paul on the road to Damascus. You remember that story, the dazzling light which blinded the soldiers? They couldn't hear anything, but Jesus spoke out of this blinding light in the sky, and so on and so forth. And I think the angel Gabriel might well have been maybe something to do with artificial insemination might explain the so-called Immaculate Conception.
Well, it has to be said that so many of the modern sightings and close contact sightings seem to involve reproduction, a study of reproduction, reproductive
yes.
organs.
Yes.
When you get stories from people who have been abducted, very frequently. I was really surprised, Timothy, at the amount of sexual content in abduction stories when you really get down to brass tacks
yes.
with abductees.
Yes.
It's remarkable.
Definitely.
Any guesses about what they're trying to do?
Well, I think hybridization is the name of the game. The question is it for their benefit or ours? They often say, abductees say, oh, you know, they were lovely beings. They said, oh, it's all just for us, you know. But
All the time, Timothy.
I think it's for their benefit, more likely. I spoke to an abductee in Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is a country I visited on seven occasions. And I met a contactee there who claims to have been taken to an alien base within Puerto Rico. And he saw many different types of craft in this giant cavern within the mountains, and they said, you know, nothing to be afraid of. You know, this is something we want to help you out, and so forth. And they mentioned, I believe, the hybridization. And I asked this abductee what he thought the true purpose of this hybridization process was, and he was convinced it was for their own benefit to help them to adapt to this planet.
Well, I've interviewed many, many abductees, and the vast majority of them, Timothy, say that these are our friends. These are beneficial beings who want nothing but the very best for us. And their treatment while being abducted was absolutely superb. Not a bad word to say. Mm-hmm. About them, Timothy, but to put it crudely, their minds have been screwed with. So
I think so.
So, you know, there are a very few researchers in the United States, I don't know about Great Britain, but you sound like you might be one of them, who aren't so absolutely sure these are warm, fuzzy creatures with our best interests in mind.
Right.
Yeah. That would be you, then.
Yep.
So if they don't have our best interests in mind, what do you think their agenda... Yes.
I don't know, Art. Honestly.
Yeah, well, that's, of course, all the big questions just sort of almost can't be answered. The who, the what, the where, the when. Almost none of this can be answered. Now, it'll be interesting to see what sort of conclusion a large network investigation like ABC's will come up with.
I can't wait.
I've got little hints that they may be suggesting at the end of it all, and this is just guesstimates from the Internet, folks, that there needs to be a more serious investigation into all of this.
Yes.
That it simply has been laughed at too much, and there's some serious stuff at question here, at issue.
Yes.
So,
well, if that's all they do at the very least, that is a great step forward. While I remember it, Art, may I mention this book now?
Please.
About the 1967 missile incidents, particularly at Malmstrom Air Force Base. It's called Faded Giant, and it's by Robert Salas, S-A-L-A-S, and James Klotz, K-L-O-T-Z, with a foreword by Raymond Fowler. It's privately published, and it is available from Arcturus Books. Signed copies are available from Arcturus Books, and I'll give you the email there. It's R. Girard, that's R-G-I-R-A-R-D 321 at AOL.com. Mm-hmm. And it's a very good book. They've got a lot of documents and case reports.
All right, give us an idea.
Reproduced.
Yes, it's the story of...
It's story specifically about the events at Malmstrom Air Force Base in 1967 when the Minutemen nuclear missiles were actually paralyzed.
Deactivated.
Precisely so, yes.
I have interviewed some of the individuals who were involved in that, and I absolutely, completely, 100% believe that it occurred. And craft were seen, it was just...
It wasn't just that. It was a number of strategic air command bases where the Minutemen were deployed.
And I suppose one could... The intense interest in UFOs and the many sightings it may go back into the 1920s or may even go back, I'm sure, to biblical times. However, the real flap started and has never let up since... Since Roswell's? Well, gee whiz,
even
since
before
the atomic
Roswell.
Bomb. The atomic bomb. The atomic bomb. Now, that must have been a real marker in time and space when we lit one off. Wouldn't you think?
I would think so, definitely. Absolutely, definitely. And it would also explain the concentration of sightings in the New Mexico area as you know, all the testimony from the military and scientific people who were summoned urgently to meetings in the 1940s, you know, about all these strange objects hovering over our rocket sites and nuclear sites.
Well,
that, and they continue to do that, by the way.
That began the age when we had the ability to destroy ourselves, to utterly destroy the capability of life continuing on this planet. That's what began then.
Yeah.
So any alien race monitoring us in any way would have, at that moment, taken notice. Do you think that's what happened?
Yes, definitely. I'm not saying it's the only reason, but that's the reason for the acceleration of activity since World War II.
In everything that you've heard, Timothy, about these meetings with the others, how convinced do they seem to be that we're going to blow ourselves up?
Well, I'd always like to keep positive about that, and I like to think that they might prevent us doing so, particularly if they have a vested interest in their own security and our nuclear weapons. Because it's often been said, and it was certainly said a lot in the late 40s and 50s and 60s with the contactees I've met, they were told that we don't really know quite what we're doing, and that the effects of these explosions continue into the solar system. They don't just affect the Earth by any means.
Oh, really?
Apparently. I don't know. That's what they've said anyway.
I wonder if perhaps they affect other dimensions as well, and nuclear detonations.
Well, exactly. That's another possibility that I've considered.
Okay. My guest is Timothy Good. So what I would ask, and I know a lot of you are going to have questions for Timothy, what I would ask is that you formulate your question and sort of get it out and then allow him to answer so that we don't get into a situation where we're all interrupting each other. That's a necessity of the... transatlantic connection. Timothy, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
There has been a fairly recent January 2000 encounter between some airliners, I guess, in Dublin. Is there an update on that?
Well, yes. This it took place in January the 4th of last year when pilots of a British Midland Airbus saw a flashing bright triangular object take off from the ground as they were passing 3,000 feet over the Slane area, which is near Dublin. And they saw that this UFO, because they were on the landing pattern, they were about 5 or 6 miles behind an aircraft in front. The aircraft in front was approached by this large, flashing, bright, triangular object. And apparently the crew experienced a power drain. A purple glow was surrounding this. It was a Boeing 737-400 series jet of Aer Lingus. Flew in front of the aircraft, forcing the pilots to change course to avoid a collision. The jet apparently experienced wake turbulence and violent shakes, and the outside temperature rose to 164 degrees centigrade for around 15 seconds.
Oh, my God.
The pilots, now, I haven't spoken to the pilots of the Aer Lingus plane yet. It's all been covered up. There's been denial at every single stage.
Well, I was going to say that there would be a record of such a temperature rise, for example, in the aircraft's equipment.
Art, I'm indebted to the principal investigators, Dermot Butler and Carl Nally of Dublin. Carl is a pilot himself, a private pilot. They were the people that got the information in the first place. I went to Dublin in November to try and get more information. I haven't yet met the pilots of the Aer Lingus plane, and I tried to speak to some Aer Lingus pilots on the flight over to Dublin, and there was annoyance on the flight deck that I'd actually tried to get information about the case, and they refused to talk to me.
Well, I don't blame them. John Lear is a good friend of mine. He's lost at least one job because of what he's said. They can't talk about it.
I know John, too.
You know, they have families. They have wives,
let me tell
children.
You that, yeah, exactly. The aircraft's wings were dented, badly dented. The air brakes malfunctioned. So this was an emergency situation which was declared. The plane had to be taken out. And it had to be repaired by Boeing, and it's now being sold to Thailand, to Thai Airways.
No kidding.
No, that's absolutely correct. And this, you know, it also happened to another aircraft, a couple of hours later on that same day. What is peculiar, you know, I talked about a fly in the ointment. There's always a stumbling block in cases, is that, you know, I gave an interview in the Irish Star in November. And, you know, we are appealing for witnesses to come forward because there are people on the plane who are very frightened by the incident. I can't believe they've all been silenced on landing, you know.
Have they apparently been?
I don't know. I have no evidence of that whatsoever. I think it's peculiar that someone hasn't come forward, but I don't doubt my sources, and I don't doubt that such events take place. And I'd like to mention these triangles briefly. I think some of the listeners will be aware, those of us who sort of surf the internet, of this extraordinary case of a flying triangle seen by a witness, a musician in Bristol, Tennessee, on October 2 of last year. Very good case and a very good illustration of the craft as well. And he was nearing an intersection near his home and exited his car to see if there was a fire, because it looked like a fire coming from between the trees and some distance away, and slowly emerged this enormous triangular-shaped craft.
Uh-huh.
He started to run, but realized there was nowhere to run to, so he just stood in awe and watched, and it slowly came into full view, estimated 300 feet at each end sides of the triangle, and only 100 feet or so high, in altitude, in other words, blocking out the entire sky. And there were large domes, as often these are seen, comparing each dome, he said, to twice the size of a car, illuminating the entire bottom, three of those domes at the apex of each corner of the triangles.
Uh-huh.
And rib-like structures, and this has been reported before. I've spoken to several witnesses, including one in the Midlands in the 1990s, who saw a very, very similar craft with these rib-like structures underneath.
Well, Timothy, let me stop you just for a moment. You're speaking to a witness. This happened to me. In other words, Timothy, I was coming home with my wife, many years ago now, and my wife yelled, "What the hell's that?" or something to that effect. She was in the passenger seat, and I stopped the car, and we got out, and a black triangle, not flying, but floating, Timothy, passed not more than 150 feet above our head. The moon and the stars all went away. It was as classic as you can possibly imagine. It didn't make a sound. You could hear crickets at a quarter mile away. It floated over our head and then continued floating toward what we call Area 51, that we're not far from here. But, Timothy, this happened to me. I've done paintings and drawings of exactly what it was like, where our car was, what the geography was like, the whole schmear, and what it looked like to us. I could have thrown a rock at the thing, except, Timothy, that I was in shock. So, you see, I've seen this myself.
I'd love to see the, have a sketch of that.
I have it. We had an artist do it for us, and we did GPS readings, and they came out and looked at the terrain and got everything exactly as it was. Exactly.
Great.
As it was. I've got a giant thing on the wall of it. So, I guess I'm a believer, Timothy. How can you not be when something that dramatic happens to you? But you know what? I don't know if it was something military. If it was, then we have the secret of anti-gravity, apparently.
Yeah.
We have the secret of noiseless propulsion. We have quite a few secret, and that they would fly it right over my head is, and here in the U.S., these triangles are appearing over major interstate highways. What?
Yes.
It's wild.
It's wild. One would wonder why you know, if they are American devices, why they would want to show themselves
hang over the interstates,
so
yeah,
overtly, as they obviously have done on many occasions.
Exactly.
But at the same time, I think a percentage, don't ask me to put a number to it, but a percentage of these craft could well be our own. And that applies over here as well, because some of them have been seen near, like British Aerospace, like Wharton up in the North Country, for example. So it's possible. On the other hand, it could be that, you know, these bases where we are developing all sorts of new types of aircraft are just being sort of overflown and checked out by the aliens. Who knows?
And, of course, we have endless tales of back engineering of alien craft at that area near me, Area 51.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true, but certainly if we laid our hands on technology like that, we'd do our very damn level best to try and figure out how it worked and
sure.
Duplicate it. That would be a natural thing to do.
Absolutely. No question about that.
Do you have any witnesses, people, I don't know, people who claim to have worked on craft like this?
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, you know, in my book, Alien Contact, I've got quite a number of chapters on the claims of Bob Lazar and others. And whereas I think there was something to that story, the problem is that Bob Lazar is not the nuclear physicist he claims to be. That's number one.
Do you believe that he was at Area 51, that he was, in fact, employed to do something?
Well, I wondered why someone who's not qualified would be sort of hired to go there. I think if he was there, it was more as a sort of part of a disclosure project, just to see what people would come out with. And he was exposed to some of it.
What do you think, other than Roswell, are the best cases that you would name?
Oh, my goodness me. There are so many. We have, in Great Britain, the Rendlesham Forest case, December 1980, when many U.S. Air Force security policemen encountered a landed craft, triangular craft, and these events were going on for several days. The deputy base commander himself, then Lieutenant Colonel Charles Holt at Woodbridge, these were twin Air Force bases of Woodbridge and Bentwaters, himself saw some of these things. There were other craft seen in the skies. There were traces left. Nick Pope himself was able to get hold of the radiation readings, which were certainly above normal. there have been all sorts of explanations and attempts to debunk it, you know, the most recent one being that it was just some U.S. serviceman going up and down the runway with a red light on top of the vehicle, but that was the explanation for it. But, you know, this went on for several days. There were lots of witnesses involved, and I find it an intriguing and very important case.
In my years of interviewing people, I had occasion to interview somebody named Travis Walton and Travis's boss, as a matter of fact. I interviewed as well, in fact, both of them at once, and they told an incredibly compelling, believable story.
Absolutely. I interviewed Travis Walton. For me, he's absolutely on the level. That's one of the most important contact stories.
I thought so. You know, just, you know, as you listen to the man, it was clear that he really had absolutely zero interest, you know, prior to this event.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a plain man, you know, telling the truth. I mean, it sounded like the absolute truth. And, of course, they went through, as you know, lie detector tests, a couple of them. So you also found that to be a pretty...
Absolutely compelling case. And I think one of the most intriguing aspects of it was nothing was ever said at any time while he was on board the craft. And he had these good-looking men and women show him around, and he would ask questions. And he, I think prior to all that, he was playing around with controls on his seat, and he rendered the craft invisible, opaque at one stage, so that he could see out into the universe, which was extraordinary. But most important, I think, is this connection between these strange, large-eyed, very pasty-colored skin beings. Do you remember all that?
Oh, of course.
Who grabbed hold of him, and he fought them off. And, you know, it does appear to me that those were sort of like biological robots who were subservient to these more human-like types.
Everybody wants to know why, and I guess that's the one question you're not going to be able to answer for us, really. Why all this is going on, when it's going to come to some sort of... Well, that is a question perhaps I can proffer. When do you think that general knowledge of the truth about enough of this will be realized? How close are we getting?
About 5 years ago, Art, I asked that question to one of my friends in Washington. And I said, look, can you imagine how frustrating this is for me? You know, I'm at the time I was sort of in my late 50s. And I said, look, you know, I've been interested since 1955. There's this constant ridicule from the media and the government and everything. You know, when is there going to be some official recognition? And he said two words. Stay healthy.
Stay healthy.
So, and since then, he and others have intimated that gradual exposure is the only way forward. They are concerned about overreaction of the public, but I think various safety nets have been put into place. One of which is, as I've said, that some of the facts have been leaked to a number of journalists, highly placed journalists.
Well, Timothy, maybe it's time that you took the test. I mean, if you were given the opportunity to reveal to the world the complete truth about alien visitation, presence, and motives, and history, and you, it was all given to you, and you could release all the information.
I could release it because I'm not an authority. I'm not a politician. So I wouldn't really have that much to lose. And in fact, I have come out with a lot of this stuff, and it's either just disbelieved or ridiculed. But it's, you know, when somebody in a really prominent position of authority comes up with this stuff, it's much, much more difficult because it's embarrassing above all. You know, we're not in control. Nobody likes to look out of control, particularly politicians. They like to tell us, as you know, how everything's great with the world and so on and so forth.
Yes.
And, you know, to admit that there are outside forces against whom we have little or no control whatsoever is political suicide and military suicide as well.
Quite right. If they can't control it, then they don't even admit it's there, and that certainly is the course they've been following. Yeah. It's just that it seems like eventually it does have to break, and I guess you were told then that as long as you can remain for another, yeah, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 years, whatever, then you're likely to get to experience the great disclosure.
Yes. I think what is happening, what I've noticed, and I'm not alone in this, is that there has been an improvement in, to a certain extent, in the media, the national and international media, with regard to reporting on this subject more seriously. I mean, certainly in terms of our recent Freedom of Information Act, a lot of reports. And I've got here, from 19th of December last year, a huge article in a broadsheet, The Independent on Sunday, an article by a regular columnist, Andy Martin, reporting that in Cambridge, in England, you know where the university is?
Yes.
He and his family saw this giant craft just hovering and going over him, no more than at a height of more than 400 or 500 feet. No noise, he said. Dark outside outline of a craft. It was nothing like an aircraft. There were no wings poking out the sides. Definitely jumbo-sized, and it wasn't going up, and it wasn't coming down. And, you know, that's from, a good journalist. And another journalist, the editor of a paper in southern England, the Southern Daily Echo, reported seeing a large triangular craft in the New Forest. That's in Hampshire.
All right. We are at the top of the hour, and we're going to go to tones here shortly. Hold on, Timothy. I'll tell you what I told ABC. I told them that after seeing what I saw, whether it's us, our back-engineered craft, or even our own craft that now defy gravity, or it's theirs, either way, disclosure of this, oh, that'd be a really big story. Okay, once again, Timothy Good with us this evening, one of the world's best ufologists, a lot of books under his belt. Alien Update is one, Unearthly Disclosure, Conflicting Interests in the Control of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, Alien Base, Earth's Encounters with Extraterrestrials, Alien Liaison, The Ultimate Secret, Beyond Top Secret, a Worldwide UFO Security Threat, and, of course, Above Top Secret, the Worldwide UFO Cover-Up. And you know, interestingly, I found a photograph of the painting that was done of what Ramona and I experienced, and it's sideways. It's the wrong aspect ratio to try and put on, but I'm going to try it. It's going to squeeze it weirdly, I think, if I try and put it in my webcam slot. But I'm going to see what I can do about that in the next hour. And if I can, I'll get it up there on my webcam. If it looks too silly when it gets squished, I won't do it. Once again, here's Timothy Good, and I would like, of course, to get to some calls this hour. But Timothy, is there anything that we didn't cover, you know, in the first couple of hours that we absolutely should?
Oh, gosh, there's tons of stuff out. I guess it would be more of interest to listeners if I mentioned things that they may not be familiar with at all.
Sure.
Now, for example, well, they may be vaguely familiar. Back in March of 1997, there was a report that a large triangular craft was seen above the house of Michael Howard, who was then Home Secretary, living down in the marshlands of southern Kent, and the event was witnessed by a journalist who I spoke to. There were other witnesses involved who subsequently came forward. This craft alternately hovered right above Michael Howard's house. He's currently leader of the Conservative Party, and he's hoping to win the election, which we're going to have in May. But I have got an official request has been put in for information about the event and his opinions and so forth, and I've already had acknowledgement that he will indeed be replying to this. So stay tuned. I'll let you know what he says about it. But interestingly, this craft alternately hovered right above his house and then retreated, you know, like 400 or 500 yards. Then it came back again, and this was going on. And there was, at one stage, all the alarms were set off because, obviously, being Home Secretary at the time, a lot of security guards around the place and dogs and so forth, and there was pandemonium. And this was witnessed by a number of people, including some firemen. So something happened, I think that's very interesting. And, you know, talking about, as we were earlier, about politicians and UFOs, but this is an election year, and the least likely subject that any politician is going to get involved with is UFOs. That's for sure. And as far as your president is concerned, I do know someone who is a friend of his and has on several occasions asked him. And the last time he asked him was in late 2003, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh, come on, you know, tell me, you know, blah, blah, blah. And this chap said, ask Cheney. That is what George Bush replied. Whether that's helpful to anybody, I don't know, but that's what your president said regarding the UFO subject.
Why do I think that's a reasonable answer? I don't think so, too. I have a feeling if anybody knows, it's Dick Cheney. All right, two things.
And George Bush Sr.
Listen.
Former President Bush knows a great deal about the subject, that I can tell you.
Okay. If you have an opportunity to get to the Coast to Coast AM website, I just took a picture of the picture and put it on my webcam up there. Now, unfortunately, the proportions are not quite right, but they're close. I had to squish it to get it in there because it only allows a certain a size photograph, 320 by 240, and those are not the appropriate... It got squished, but it'll be up there in the next 5 or 10 minutes. So I would love you to see that... Timothy, it's exactly what we saw. It'd be up there very shortly. In the meantime, here are some people who want to talk to you. First time caller line, you're on the air with Timothy Good. Hi.
How you doing?
Doing all right, sir. Who are you?
Well, it's Bob from Los Angeles. You sure caught me off guard there for a second.
Sorry about that.
Well, anyway, I appreciate, Timothy Good, all your hard work and research into this field, because I've conducted 20 years of my life trying to get answers, too, as well, because I worked in defense and I worked in general aviation for about 12 years. And I have had enough evidence shown me, and I've seen enough stuff to know that there is definitely something going on. So just know that in this field, if you really do investigate it too far, you will have uncomfortable situations where people threaten you. I was just wondering if you've been threatened, too, as well.
That's a very, very good question. Timothy, indeed, as you begin to probe secrets and get into areas that perhaps the government is not yet ready to be disclosed, are there ever times when you have been, do you feel in danger?
First of all, I appreciate the I'm glad you raised this question, Bob. First of all, I've never been threatened, but I have had intimidation in the form of interference with telephone calls, most extraordinary shrieking sounds, howling sounds on the telephone when engaged in interesting conversations, particularly with my American friends. I've also, on several occasions, had items taken from my room. I was in, I think it was Virginia, in the 1970s, touring with the London Symphony Orchestra at a motel. I noticed two government pool cards were outside, but I didn't pay too much attention to it. And I went to lunch, and when I came back, my room, someone had been in my room and taken my research notes, but left expensive cameras and zoom lenses and stuff in the room. So I had no research material with me. But things like that have happened. I could go into to other cases. There was a case in, I think it was Raleigh, North Carolina, when I was appearing on a local television station, and this is my own fault. I thought I'd just test the system. I noticed that there was a U.S. Army base, headquarters of the U.S. Army Reserve in Raleigh, North Carolina, not all that far from my motel. So during this television interview, I happened to mention the alleged briefing about the UFO situation, which was given to U.S. Army Reserve officers in Puerto Rico in the late 80s. And I wondered whether there would be any repercussions. Well, when I came, I also advertised the fact that I would be giving a small talk to some invited guests at the motel at lunchtime.
Mm-hmm.
I went back, I gave the talk, I came back to my room, and a lot of stuff had been stolen from my girlfriend as well at the time. A lot of stuff. Now, it could have been somebody, it could have been an inside job. I must state that at the outset. At the same time, the police were not that cooperative. The best I learned was that the hotel had hardly ever been broken into. There were about 400 other rooms. Nobody else's room had been taken. So do you think that's intimidation? Do you think that was done by some military guys? I don't know. I keep an open mind about it. But those are some of the things that have happened to me.
So obviously they've perhaps suggested to you that, what, you should be slowing up a little, you should be more careful about what you say. What do you think the message might have been?
I don't know. Probably the latter.
Fair answer. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Timothy Good. Good morning.
Good morning to you both, and it's always an honor, Art. This is Robin in Boulder, Colorado, mm-hmm. and I'll be brief. I wonder if the gentleman would know of a way for a human to initiate contact, should one desire it. And would he care to comment on, hope I've got the name right, Billy Meyer?
Okay, very good. Actually, both good questions. One,
okay. I didn't get the lady's first name.
I'm sorry, she's gone. But at any rate, two good questions.
Anyway, she's from Colorado.
Yes.
The way to initiate contact, my goodness me, some people don't need to initiate contact, apparently, especially if they're abducted out of their bedrooms in the middle of the night.
Would you say she should be careful what she wishes for?
I would, actually. My feeling is that one should always ask for protection in these cases. One way to initiate contact, which worked for me on two occasions, which I've discussed on this program, I believe, back in August when I was last on, is to try telepathy, because these beings are very telepathic, and I don't know about the current time frame, but there were a number of these people based on our planet at the time, and they can pick up your thoughts, and they have interacted with human beings who've sent out telepathic signals. It certainly worked for me, and I had my own very close encounter through that. Second part of your question, as far as Billy Meyer is concerned, you might be surprised to learn that I actually discovered Billy Meyer when I was in India in 1964. I didn't meet him then, but I met his friends. This was long before the story had come out. And I then traced him to Switzerland, and I spoke to him, and I thought he sounded sincere. However, in the 1970s, when Lou Zinstark, who got to know him, because I gave her his address, she spent a lot of time with him and thought he was sincere and everything, but I became very, very dubious about the photographs that he was promoting for all sorts of reasons, which we probably don't have time to go into now. And I know many people think they're genuine, but I do not. But I do think that Billy Meyer did have contact at some time, and then maybe just to sort of gain more credence in these stories, he produced the photographs. But
He's an interesting character,
that's for sure.
That brings to mind another question that I really have to ask. I look at ufology, and I've been looking at ufology and interviewing ufologists and both sides of the question for years and years and years, Timothy, and the one thing that I have learned is that ufology is probably its own worst enemy.
Yes.
And at various times, people come on this program, and they virtually shred each other, as if it's not tough enough with the mass media out there
yes.
and the government and all the institutions laughing, and
yes.
It's not tough enough. We have to destroy ourselves. Do you have comments on that?
Yes, well, I'm afraid there's always going to be rivalry and politics in any sphere, in any subject. And ufology is no exception. I think it's it's not just people, you know, sort of knocking each other that's the problem. There's also, I think, people with wild claims, really wild, unproven claims, who come forward and get an awful lot of attention. I'm not going to go into any names, but I think that does a great deal more harm to the subject, and it plays into the government's and the media's hands when people make these wild claims. I don't know what you think about that, Art.
What percentage of UFO stories and contact stories and all the rest of it would you say is legitimate, and what percentage would you think are outright frauds?
Wow, I'm no good at math, Art, but
of those
outright frauds, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know, but I would say the percentage of absolutely legitimate cases and legitimate claimants is relatively small.
Uh-huh. So you would say that the bulk of them, or even the majority of them, would be fair, if not frauds, are simply untrue.
Well, or a mixture, you know, or you know, people suffering from delusions or what. But, you know, even if it's a minority can be 49%, Art, which is a high percentage, you would grant.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, of course.
But I don't know. As I say, I'm no good at math. I haven't actually, you know, gone through all the tens of thousands of cases there are. I mean, there's so much stuff. We suffer from a surfeit of information. It's not, as a lot of people say, that there's not enough information to go on. There's too much information.
Let's try this approach. Of the claims that you have investigated, how many times have you found yourself disappointed?
Many times. Many, many times.
But not enough that you dismiss the entire phenomenon, obviously.
Obviously not.
Yes. Okay, that sure does make it a tough job, Timothy, a really hard job, because most of these claims, by their very nature, are pretty fantastic, aren't
yes.
they?
Yes, absolutely.
Even the ones, for example, the photograph that I've got up, I hope you get a chance to see it. It's just a picture of a picture, but it represents exactly what I saw, even though the proportions are scrunched down a little. Sorry for that. That's exactly what I saw, and it's how close it was to my eye.
I can't wait to get online.
When you've seen something like that, it changes you forever, or at least
yes.
until you get a legitimate explanation for what otherwise cannot be.
Yes.
Anyway, east of the Rockies.
May I mention very briefly,
yes.
in case it gets forgotten, I'm going to be in the States in April and speaking at the Ozark UFO conference, the annual Ozark UFO conference, which
all
is www.ozarkufo.com, all lowercase, OZARKUFO.com. And the other speakers include Linda Howe, Grant Cameron, Wendell Stevens, Nancy Talbot, and Scott Ramsey, who will be discussing the Aztec case of 1948. He's got a lot of new evidence for that. Bill Hamilton and David Marler, who will be discussing flying triangles in particular.
That's quite an impressive list, all right.
And there are two other, Wendell Stevens will be there as well. There's also two speakers to be announced who hasn't been fixed yet.
All right.
It's a great conference, and I hope to see some of the listeners there.
All right. East of the Rockies.
The 8th to the 10th of April inclusive.
That's important. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Timothy Good. Hello.
Yes, hello, Art. This is Keith in Hamilton, Ontario.
Yes, Keith.
Hi, Timothy. I wanted to ask you about UFO abductees. In many cases, they claim there is a chip embedded in their neck or arm, and they had them surgically removed. My question is there any assessment or analysis on just what exactly these things are, and are they man-made? Thank you.
First of all, let me mention that Roger Lair, L-E-I-R, has written a book on his investigations. He's extraction of some of these objects from quite a number of patients.
Have you looked into these? I've, of course, interviewed Dr. Lear. Roger's a good friend. And have you looked into his book and his claims?
Yes, I have, but not as thoroughly as I would like. For example, I haven't seen the famous video of the moving implant. I expect you're aware of that, where it moves around underneath someone's arm.
Actually, it was an ear. Maybe an arm as well. But
okay.
Whitley Strieber, a very good friend of mine, co-author of the book we wrote became the movie, he had an implant that moved. They tried to retrieve it from his ear, and the damn thing, the scalpel touched it, and it moved.
Yes. Also, the late Dr. John Altshuler, a hematologist and the first to investigate the animal mutilations, was also the first to excise unknown foreign objects from a few patients, and one of which he thought was just, sort of aggregation of human tissue. Others, he couldn't explain. He was just baffled.
Yes. All right.
I think there could be something to it. But again, I think everyone thinks they've got chips embedded in them, you know.
Well, there are a lot of those. Timothy Good is my guest. It is true that Britain just literally got a Freedom of Information Act. And apparently Timothy feels that, well, they were ready for it by the time it came out. You may recall in the Roswell situation when we had a man in Congress who actually went after the information. The only answer he ever got was, whoops.
Congressman Schiff.
Yes, and it looks like these files have been destroyed.
Yes.
Or lost, I think they said, or lost.
Or both. Or whatever.
Or both. And you think much the same kind of thing happened there in Britain with your new Freedom of Information Act?
Probably, in some cases, yes.
All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Timothy. Good morning.
Good morning. I was wanting to find out from Timothy, how many people do you believe, if you believe, I'm not sure if you do or not, are possibly descendants from an alien race or people from the UFOs and stuff, you know?
All right, well, it's a reasonable enough question. If it's a genetic connection, then how many of us do you feel are descendant of aliens?
Well, I think indirectly, the whole planet has been affected in some way by genetic manipulation going way, way back.
Huh. So one way or the other.
But one way or the other. I can't say that, but I know that to be a fact. But it's my belief that there was genetic manipulation of primitive man when we first made our appearance on this planet.
Another question would be, and I think I'll ask you, do you think that there's any possibility that we are not the first? And by that, I mean the first intelligent occupants of Earth.
I'm glad you raised that, Art. I've written about that in my books. I think it's quite likely that many, many aeons of time ago, there were advanced races who'd maybe colonized this planet, and they were, through some cataclysm, were forced to seek other habitation. In that connection, I'm very interested in... I have a friend called Rubens Vilela. He's a scientist, a meteorologist from Brazil. He's also a former CIA communications specialist, and he's been on numerous Antarctic expeditions as a meteorologist, including many with the United States Navy. He had a type of contact with ETs and was given proof of their, for example, their ability to change weather, because he was a meteorologist, and they certainly proved their existence to him. He saw their craft. And he said, these cosmic visitors proclaim a genetic origin linked to our own species on Earth. Though they inhabit a dying planet where we would have to manipulate time and space dimensions to reach. And that's what Rubens Vilela wrote in a letter to Michael Collins, the Apollo 11 astronaut, in 1979.
Whew.
And remember, he himself acknowledged that there were several species coming here, and in in particular with the species that he was familiar with, he said, "They desire an alliance without fear and offer us protection against impending cosmic dangers."
I wonder how many...
And emphasized, Rubens Villela, certain other alien species are inimical to human beings, so there are dangers.
Have there been mentions, Timothy, of not just bombs that we might do ourselves away with, but our current environmental situation, which seems
absolutely
quite distressing?
Absolutely. The contactee, for example, Enrique Castillo Rincon, I've written several chapters about him in my last book, Unearthly Disclosure, and he was given a tremendous amount of information about coming cataclysms on this planet. He says he actually says I do not give an account of the calamities announced by the because they had information covering many years as to how the facts will unwind, and he goes into some detail. I'm just checking through my book here. I can't remember everything. He was taken to several alien bases, one of which was under the Pacific Ocean in the Marianas Trench, which is about 11,500 meters down. But the base was located in a wall of that area, and an extraordinary story. And he was given information about coming events on this planet, including enormous geological cataclysms, and the fact that there would be problems with our sun, which would lead to very severe problems on Earth. And he goes into some detail about that. I can't remember chapter and verse, Art. I'm sorry, right now, but...
That's quite all right, Timothy. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Timothy. Good morning.
Yes, sir. I was wondering, what is the significance of the triangle versus the disc? Are the aliens doing the disc, and maybe man did the triangle because it was better to maneuver electrically now?
Well, I'd like the answer to that one myself, Timothy.
I didn't actually hear the triangles and the what?
Well, he was asking about the significance of the triangle versus the disc. In other words, he was suggesting
his voice was incredibly distorted.
I understand that the disc might be alien, he felt, while the triangle might be more earthly in origin.
No. Triangles have been seen for a very, very long time. It's just no way they can all be terrestrial. So, they have many different types of craft. Many, many different shapes have been observed, and triangle is just one of them.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Timothy. Good morning.
Hello, gentlemen. This is Rick in Pennsylvania.
Hi, Rick.
First, let me just say this, and I have the most respect for both of you gentlemen. I don't believe in any of this UFO stuff. I never have. I am a hardcore Bible-believing Christian, but that being said, I do believe people are seeing things, no doubt about it. But my question, sir, is if in this day and age we live in, such a new age, such a all different things, you know, anything goes, why would the government hide these things? And if these things exist, just tell us. I mean, obviously I have my own opinion on what these are, just like most Christians, and I have another quick question. Survey true Christians, and if you ever have done that, to see exactly what the percentage of their sightings or their abductions would be, I think you'll find that it's almost 0%.
May I ask you a question, caller?
Yes, sir.
If it turned out that you were entirely wrong, and this really was various other intelligent races visiting Earth for whatever motivation, and that actually turned out to be the case irrefutably, how disturbed by that fact would you be?
Well,
honestly,
let me just say this real quick. When God created the universe, okay, before Satan fell, we don't know what was out there. When Satan fell, the earth and the universe was corrupt forever. So, yes, there could be, because when God said, "Let there be," the universe is still being, okay? That's all I can say about that. How upset would I be?
Yes, sir.
As a Christian and a follower of God and Jesus,
yes,
I would accept it. But the point is, though,
would you accept it if it included a story that your vision of creation, your belief and faith in the way creation occurred, just wasn't so?
Well, see, that's a hard question to answer. That's my beliefs. And you know what? Let me say this, Art. I believe you're a man that's searching. I really feel that. I've listened to you for almost a year, and God, I hope you find the true.
Well, answer my question, though. I know it's hard, but answer it anyway. If it turned out irrefutably that they were our creators, not the way it's in the Bible, that would put you in tilt, wouldn't it?
Well, I guess that would. Well, let me just say this. Okay, I understand that. If there is a God that is a perfect God, right, and makes no mistakes, then why would he make the horrible mistake of sending his son to be our savior?
All right. Well, it seemed to me that Timothy seemed to suggest, if you were listening carefully between the lines, that Jesus might have been an alien. Timothy?
I did suggest that. Jesus said in the book of John on two occasions, I am not of this world. Now, I'm sure Rick will say, well, of course, that was just metaphorical, which it well might have been. I wasn't there. But you can't get away from the Star of Bethlehem, the bodily ascension into heaven surrounded by two beings in shining raiment, his remarkable abilities and so forth, and the appearance to the conversion of Paul on the road to Damascus when Jesus appeared in some kind of brilliant object in the sky. Things like that, I think, and of course the angel Gabriel. What are angels? We're not creatures with flapping wings. An angel simply means a messenger, and they're normally described, even if they come from the heavens, meaning the sky, possibly as human beings, human-type beings. And that goes into the Old Testament as well, because people who encountered mysterious beings coming from the sky said that this was their appearance. They had the appearance of man.
Mm-hmm.
That's Ezekiel, I believe.
All right. Well, would you say that people like Rick, and he sounded like a very nice guy, but
yes,
he did dance around that question quite a bit, as in not actually answering it. He would go on tilt for sure if that kind of irrefutable proof was presented to him, because it would violate everything he believes and has faith in.
Well,
and Brookings Institute, I think, said that for that very reason, we couldn't disclose this.
I think religious sensitivities is certainly one of the reasons for the cover-up, because of the connection. And I can sympathize with governments on that level.
So can I. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Timothy Good. Hi.
Yes, hello. This is Kerry calling from Tucson.
Yes.
Timothy, a while back, last year when you were in Tucson, Arizona,
yes,
you interviewed a friend of mine about his encounter when he was back in the 70s when he was in the
Navy. Yes, Bill.
Yes.
Indeed. I did, indeed. And we talked about that. He came on the show in August with George Norrie, a terrific story, and I interviewed him for many hours, and I find this a compelling story. He only got a couple of points wrong. The incident took place not in 1975, as he thought, but it was 1976,
mm-hmm,
on board the USS Forrestal, when,
yeah,
to cut a long story short, there was a NASA shockwave test, which I have found did definitely take place, because I'm doing a lot of research into that case.
Yeah, I was going to ask you.
And then these unidentified submarine objects appeared in a completely smooth sea. The sea suddenly went smooth. Two circular craft and two triangular craft with all sorts of lights on them came up from the sea and the scene. And there's a lot more to that story, but I don't want to compromise Bill in any way, and I don't want to compromise my own investigations, because
I
am in touch with some naval people about this case.
Ah, well, I'll let him know, okay?
Sorry?
I'll let him know, because I tried to get him, hold of him tonight, but I couldn't get a hold of him.
He's not on the internet, of course, and I was going to phone him, but it just slipped my mind at the last time, and so forth, because I would have liked him. Usually he listens to this show always, so...
Yeah, I don't know where he is tonight. I tried to get a hold of him.
Give him my warmest regards.
I can tell you this. He would have a chance of getting in. We've got, every single phone line is locked up. Internet, you're on the air with Timothy Good. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. The question I had with all the I'm a Christian. My name's Patrick from Oklahoma, and I too am a Christian. But my all of this is, you know, rather spine tingling type of conversation and realization. But my question is, do you have any stories of times that you've come across aliens or stories of aliens or UFOs that just gave you a sense of evil? Definitively.
Okay, that's an excellent question.
It's a very good question, and yes, indeed, I have. And whether these beings are aliens or from other dimensions, you know, it's not necessarily a safe universe with beings of sweetness and light. I mean, as above, so below. There's good and there is evil, and undoubtedly, in my opinion, there are beings from elsewhere who I would term evil, definitely.
Then he would say, if he were still here, well, yes, evil, of course evil, because really we're not talking about aliens. We're talking about Lucifer and his influence here on Earth. Christians would say, well, that's real. Sure, it's real. It's Lucifer at work.
Well, I can't comment on that. I'm not sure if I believe in a specific being that's responsible for evil. I think it goes way beyond that, but probably beyond my comprehension.
Well, again, though, it comes back to the faith that so many... I mean, it's so strong in the world. It's not as though it's changed. Christians believe what they believe. We have people in the world who are willing to kill us unless we are willing to believe what they believe.
That's right.
I mean, people are living and dying and fighting wars for what they believe about God.
True, and a lot of Christians went around in their tens of thousands killing people who didn't believe in Christianity as well. So, I mean,
well, yes.
It works on... But I think we've sort of hopefully got past that stage now, but...
Well, maybe, but isn't what you have described, when you really get down to the bare bones of it, almost a new religion?
Yes. Well, in fact, many religions have been engendered as a result of people becoming fanatically obsessed with UFOs. And it's an inextricable link between these subjects.
It is. On the one hand, they're linked, and on the other hand, they're at absolute odds with each other. And I think that's what prevents full disclosure. But maybe I'm wrong about that. I've thought that all these years, ever since the Brookings report. I don't think much has changed in the world, even though we have a more modern world with all these great technological conveniences. It's still people's faith, and a lot of what's said by ufologists, really, bottom line, Timothy, it does challenge that faith.
Yes, absolutely.
And so...
And a lot of people have very, very peculiar beliefs on all sorts of subjects.
Uh-huh. Well...
Not just ufology.
I would think the open-minded ones, then, would and should read your books. Is there any first book, since you've got so many, that people should read? Probably your latest, I'm sure, right?
Well, no, I wouldn't recommend that to start off with. Unearthly Disclosure really goes to the outer limits. Probably the best is Beyond Top Secret.
Beyond Top Secret. and I think probably...
But, unfortunately, nearly all these books are out of print. I think there may be some copies of Alien Base and Unearthly Disclosure available on Amazon, but Above Top Secret, Beyond Top Secret, Alien Contact, and so forth are all out of print, and you can try Amazon, but I wish some of them would be reprinted.
Well, maybe they will. Timothy Good, it has been a pleasure, as always, to have you all the way across from Great Britain. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, Art.
And good night, my friend, and don't forget, folks...